Your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It is 12:11 as we sit in the Allstate Showcase studio along a beautiful, sunny Michigan Avenue. Might be chilly. Who knows? I'm not outside. Andrea Haynes is in the studio. She's not outside either, but it looks nice out there, right?
Beautiful, sunny, blue sky.
Andrea is blue sky. How'd you do that? Did you do that
on
purpose?
It's pretty easy, actually.
Yeah. It happens all the time. Blue Sky. Andrea is the editor of Blue Sky Innovation that you read the Chicago Tribune about the tech world, the innovation world, and all of that. Joins us on Fridays. And, well, welcome back. Let's talk. What do you want to? We can talk Facebook. We could talk. She's rolling her eyes.
Facebook.
There's a story about how more of us are streaming television content than ever. And there are a couple statistics in here that kind of blow me away. But tell me about that.
Yeah. So U.S. households with paid streaming service of some sort, this is your Netflix, your Amazon Prime, your Hulu, has surged, which of course we would all know this, but they've now put a number on it that it's surged 450% in less than a decade. And now pretty much half, more than half of U.S. households are using streaming services.
Right. So the 450%, to me, that's not a big deal because it was close to 0% 10 years ago, right? I mean, but the fact that more than half of us now do it, it's kind of become the way we watch TV.
Yeah, I think, you know, half is always a little bit of a tipping point, right? And it's now past half that people are really using these services.
So we're talking Netflix,
in many cases, yeah,
Amazon, yeah. YouTube, maybe. Right,
yeah,
YouTube
I think
count?
Any, yeah.
How about you? You obviously have this, right?
I do. I use Netflix quite a lot, so I definitely use that pretty heavily. I don't use Hulu or some of the others, but surely everybody I know has one or two of them.
Right.
And just in terms of even watching television, I feel like everything is DVR'd, right? So it's just like in terms of watching live television, March Madness might be about the only time. I might do it.
I watch almost no TV live. And then when I start saying that, I have all the exceptions, right? So news programming I do, sports programming I do. But as far as dramas or comedies, for me, my wife watches and she does DVR shows. So she'll be watching more network shows and things like that. I only watch now on Netflix or Amazon. That's almost all I watch. And it's becoming, you know, I see this in myself. I'm becoming less and less social because not only do I watch those things, I watch them on my computer with the computer on my lap and headphones in my ears in the dark. It's like a completely solitary thing. It's like being in a movie theater all by yourself without the bad popcorn and the crowd behind you.
Yeah. Well, there's no law that you have to do it in the dark. So you could rejoin society a little bit and at least have the lights on while you watch.
It looks better in the dark, I think. But so then in the story, it says that consumers spend on average 38 hours watching video content each week, 15 hours of which is streamed. So, okay, a little less than half. 38 hours of TV each week? I don't think I'm close to that.
Yeah, it does feel like a lot in a way. On the other hand, if you have, you know, news show on for a couple of hours, if you watch a lot on the weekends, or if you watch a couple movies, I sort of see how you can get there. I'm not sure I personally get there.
But 38 hours is more than 5 hours a week, a day, I should say. Between 5 and 6 hours a day.
Yeah. But, you know, do you have something on a couple hours in the morning, like a morning news show?
I don't.
Then maybe 3 hours in the evening? It's not so hard to imagine.
Yeah, it is still hard for me to imagine because I just don't live it. But I guess I understand how others would do it.
Yeah. Do you read books? What do you do at night?
You know, I'm doing stuff with my travel company, and I don't usually end till 8, and I go to bed at 10. I got 2 hours.
Yeah.
But I might have a political show on at before dinner or something.
Yeah.
But the other thing that strikes me about this story is that, you know, it said that typically when people get older, they take in content the way their parents did. You know, they move toward the old. But when it comes to streaming, which I think really shows that the whole thing is a revolution, the boomers are moving toward the Gen Xers and the millennials, right? They're picking up streaming more quickly.
Yeah, it's super interesting. So this overall, this number and the statistic came out of a Deloitte study. And they found that Generation X, which is my generation between 35 and 51, is tipping toward the younger generation, which is the opposite of what usually happens. Normally, as people age, they age into the habits of their parents, right? That seems logical. But Gen X is doing the opposite. They're becoming more like the millennial generation.
All right, so
I think that's pretty interesting.
Right. But don't you think that just speaks that it's a larger cultural...
It's kind of a revolution. Yeah, it is. It's just such the pace of the change and the rate of the change is just so large that it's...
It'd be like, so Gen Xers now are starting to use refrigerators instead of ice boxes like their parents
did. There you go.
It's never going to go back. Gen Xers are using Starbucks. Oh, I have a Starbucks cup in my hand.
You do.
And I guess I didn't realize how earth unfriendly it was.
I do realize it because I do go there and, you know, as you know, we have Starbucks right across the street from our shared office here.
Can be in and out in 90 seconds.
Many of us are there all the time. And yeah, there's definitely some guilt there right around the products. So Starbucks is working with a venture fund that tries to develop sustainable consumer goods, and they're kind of doing a challenge where they're trying to get a greener coffee cup that would be fully recyclable and compostable. So that's good news, I guess, but the overall statistics on a lot of the drinks are pretty bad. Like Starbucks uses something like 4 to 6 billion cups each year.
Yeah.
And just 1.4% of their drinks are served in reusable containers.
So this cup I'm holding is not recyclable. So when I throw it in the recycling, it's only to make myself feel better?
You know, that's the other whole issue here that activists will talk about. Is like, it's one thing to even talk about the materials, but you've got entire cities and infrastructures that are not adequately, you know, recycling,
right.
And they're not collecting right. There's not necessarily stuff to do with the materials. It's kind of a big mess, and it needs a really big fix because this is a lot of stuff. And the green straws aren't so great either.
Oh, the green straws are stupid.
Yeah.
Have we talked about that?
I don't think you and I
it
have.
It came up on one of the other segments that it was such a great invention. I don't get that as green straw thing at all.
So people don't like paper straws, which would maybe be the logical next thing, but I think there too, they need to develop something that consumers will accept. That's not putting quite as many of those green plastic straws into landfills and oceans.
Hey, in the second half hour, Michael Ansanlo will be here. He's the CEO of P.F. Chang's and got an MBA from the University of Chicago. So he'll be happy, right?
Highly prestigious. So, you know, the U.S. News and World Report does the university rankings that are very, very popular and considered sort of definitive, I guess, in that world. And the University of Chicago's Booth School of Business has tied for first place for the first time, tying with Harvard. And that's for its full-time MBA program.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Andrea Haynes, what's in Red Eye this week?
So Red Eye has a race guide. So for all the fun runs, all the races, it's all kicking off with the Shamrock Shuffle this weekend. So we have a summer-long guide to races throughout the city.
All right. Well, thanks for coming by. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Steve.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Here we sit, 12:22 on this Friday afternoon. Tom Gimbel is in the studio, the CEO of LaSalle Network. Tom, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Always good to be with you.
So how was the big March Madness party last Friday?
It was excellent. We had a lot of people come through and just fun. And I mean, I think the Loyola thing helps everything. Everybody's happy in Chicago.
We are very excited for the Loyola.
No one knew where Loyola's campus was. Right. 2 weeks ago, and today everybody's proud of their favorite basketball team.
And their favorite nun. We've all got a favorite nun now.
I mean, it is really fantastic.
Okay, you pulled a story from the Wall Street Journal, which fascinates me. I was talking to a guy who runs a manufacturing company a couple of weeks ago and talking about worker training and all of that. And there's a move to, actually companies are, they say what, colleges aren't preparing people for the workplace, so they're actually creating their own schools?
Yeah, and a lot of it is kind of this hybrid between degreed and blue collar. And so you get companies that need, and not necessarily even blue collar, but more engineering in the field and
things like,
you know, the AT&T's.
People are getting their hands dirty a little
bit
more. They're the ones who aren't prepared.
Exactly. And so they're coming out and they don't know, you know, there's almost this shame. Well, maybe I want to be in a blue collar thing, but I don't know the skills that are necessary. Or I'm learning how to be an engineer, but how do I apply that when I'm actually doing the work? And so you get more and more schools or more and more companies that are saying, okay, how can we attract workers? I'd love to tell you that I believe that this is about an altruistic movement to help people, right? This is 3.9% unemployment in big Fortune 100, Fortune 500 companies need to get
people. They need to find people who can
exactly
work for them.
Right. So they're sitting there and saying, well, if people are graduating with degrees and the degrees aren't as useful as they should be, which is a problem, whether it's online schools or traditional colleges, nonprofit colleges, people are graduating with skills and they don't know how to monetize the degree.
Right. And so that begs the question to me, what schools are for, right? And I, look, you're rolling eyes because you know where I'm headed, maybe.
I do. I think I know exactly
where I'm headed.
I'm a big believer that college is a great incubator.
Okay.
I think it's a maturation process. I think there's a social element to it outside of the education.
I'm with you there. And I also think, though, that there's value in further in being educated, right? In a liberal arts education. And you don't come out necessarily with job skills.
Did you read that book, the Death of the Liberal Arts Education by Zareed Fakara?
No, we have not.
You need to read that.
Listen, I think we're trying to talk next week. UW Stevens Point, they're facing budget issues. Mm-hmm. They want to get rid of all their liberal arts classes.
So you know, I tell my kids this, 18, 16, 13-year-old kids, you need to learn chemistry because one day you're sitting in a business meeting and you go, well, what's the litmus test for this? And you actually remember what a litmus test was.
Right.
And there's so many nuances like that. And I believe that learning a liberal arts education is the foundation for communication skills.
But it's not helping people who are in these positions, right?
It's not helping.
Or maybe it's not a good investment for people in these positions. I don't know the answer to that.
I don't think anybody does. The problem is the goal of immigrants coming to this country is, gosh, my kids can go to get an education and they can get a job that's better than the blue collar job that I had. However, that's not for everybody. And it's the same thing on the white collar side that, you know, there aren't a lot of white collar parents, Steve, that you or I or other people know. And they go, oh, I hope my kid graduates and becomes a union tradesman.
Right.
That's not the American dream.
So that's part of it. And the other side is that even if you do become a union tradesman, it's okay if you can quote Kierkegaard while you're working on your plumbing. Right?
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with it. But the thing is that if your kid's happy and they want to be a pipe fitter or they want to climb a telephone pole, God bless them. Because I'll tell you this. I know a lot of people who are accountants or technology people, and they're miserable and they're trapped under a heavy mortgage from a job that their dad told them to do 30 years ago, and they're miserable.
The issue is that the cost of learning to quote Kierkegaard is so expensive that you can't get out from under it if you're climbing a pole.
I think the bigger problem is that people feel that they have to go do it. And they have to go. Yeah. When you go to college, if you and I could go back to college, I think both of us, we're friends.
Right.
We would take different classes. We'd go more.
Right.
We'd pay better attention. We'd take different classes to augment it. We'd want to learn more.
Right.
When you're 19, you don't know what you want to learn.
Running out of time. But one other part of this conversation then is those employers who have on their job requirements a BA degree.
Yep.
Need to rethink that.
I don't think we're there yet. I think the horse isn't even out of the barn.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't think that the employers are losing out on good potential employees because they're requiring a degree?
No, I don't. And I'm a firm believer that in the white collar job arena, right, that you do want people who've got that college degree because the ability, even though writing and grammar and texting has changed everything, the ability to verbally communicate, to process information that's taught through having to write a paper and having to do 7 redrafts. There's value to
that. See, I want to pursue this further because I've totally talked out of both sides of my mouth here.
We are.
Right? Because I've talked about how...
That's what you get paid to do. You're a radio host.
Yes, I do. Thanks very much, Tom. You'll never be on again. Have a good weekend.
You too.
It's the Wind
Go
Trust.
Loyola.
Go Blurs. You got to say it that way. Do it again. Come here. Go Blurs.
Go Blurs.
Go Blurs.
Ramblers. Go Blurs.
Let's go Blurs. Sko Blurs.
Go Blurs.
That's the way Bennett Wakenight, the Sko producer Blurs. And grad says.
After he's had a few drinks.
Maybe. I don't know. It's the Wind Trust Business Lunch.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It's 12:38 as we sit here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on this Friday afternoon. In the studio is Michael Osanlo. He's the CEO of P.F. Chang's. Michael, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
And I think we pretty much covered everything during the news, so you're dismissed now.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I want to start by congratulating you. Great job on the Olympics.
Yeah, we sponsored it, did it really well.
It was here in Channel 7, you know, where they had the P.F. Chang's logo behind, and they talked about the Olympics in Pyeongchang.
Right.
So when that happens I don't know if it made it all the way up to you.
For
but
sure.
When something like that happens, how does a company respond to it?
Well, look, you can never dismiss sheer dumb luck, and that's what I characterize it at. But when we saw it, we immediately jumped on it. I mean, first we said the appropriate disclaimers, but in a world today with social media the way it is, we jumped all over it on social media.
And it's still alive. It's still bouncing around out there.
It is a little bit. It's obviously... for appropriate reasons, it's come down a bit. But I don't know if you caught it. We had our team putting together these little 15-second videos of our version of Winter Olympic sports.
It's perfect.
Yeah, like cocktail curling on the bar. They're rolling two drinks down the bar, coordinated chopsticks.
It really does speak to running a business in 2018, right? I would imagine that's true, that you have to be much more nimble today than maybe you had to be 30 years ago.
Yeah, the word nimble or agile is the word I use, particularly when it comes to marketing. If you're going to be relevant, relevant is like 15 minutes. If you think you need to research it, study it, wait and then do it, you're already too late.
Right. Tell me about casual dining and how you're doing. Chicago is pretty good for you guys?
Yeah, Chicago's a great market for us. We collectively are doing well. We had a positive comp year last year, which is sort of a tallest midget kind of dynamic. But casual dining is a tough place, right? Casual dining has been in a challenged environment for quite a while, but we're outperforming.
I thought we had entered in this new era of casual dining was going to take over the world.
I think with everybody looking at the economy, discretionary spending, consumer confidence, everything is sort of pointing up for casual dining. But casual dining it's actually become a story of haves and have-nots. So the haves, the reason we're doing well, there's a number of people who are doing well. It's because you're cooking from scratch, you're cooking with real ingredients, and you're getting your message out there. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to give people as much food as they can eat for $9.99, I think you're struggling.
Because the food's not as good.
So it's got to come out of somewhere.
I also read, and this doesn't apply if we're looking at casual dining as a whole,
yeah,
but that one of the problems too for individual restaurants is that there are just too many restaurants out there.
That's an often debated one. There's a lot of independents out there, and the independents come and go. And so most of the data that everybody looks at is based on the chains, right? So mm-hmm. when you see casual dining as a segment was down, 2.4% last year, a lot of people think that's going to independents.
And it probably is, you think?
I think some has to be going. I do think that there's some overbuilt chains out there as well.
I wonder if casual dining is hurt by supermarkets. I mean, supermarkets are truly becoming supermarkets these days, where you can go get all kinds of prepared food, bring it home, and eat at your table.
It's definitely a trend that is going to fight with casual dining. It's people want to see their food, they want to see the ingredients, they want more integrity, and so prepared meals in grocery stores, the meal kit delivery companies that mail you all the stuff, and
we
you
did
just
that
cook
for
it.
A while.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. That's what a lot of people say. They did it for a while. I think casual dining still has a relevant place because sometimes you just want to sit back and relax and let somebody else take care of everything for you.
You know, that's one of those things, and maybe this makes me old, but I know Grubhub is local and it's huge. I have never once used Grubhub because, Michael, if I'm going to pay your prices to go have your food,
yeah,
which is fair, I want to have it at your place. You know, I want to have the experience of going out to eat. I don't want to sit on my card table and, you know, watch Jeopardy.
I think there's some truth to that, but I think you and I are probably dating ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
There's definitely a macro trend where younger people in particular are asking more for what we call off-premises dining, right? So the combination of takeout, third-party delivery, and catering has been growing phenomenally well for us, and I'm sure for every other casual dining company. Because I think people today, more and more, want to eat on their terms.
And so how big is carryout for you guys?
In total, that combination of takeout, delivery, and third party is about 18% of our business now.
And how does that compare to other casual dining chains?
You know, we probably have some room to grow there. We have restaurants and we have markets where we do close to 30% of our business is outside the restaurant itself. And it's interesting, Steve, because what we're doing is, if you think about it from a restaurateur's perspective, you got to build different restaurants. You got to have a bigger kitchen that can handle all of that volume.
Right. But you have to prepare food differently too, right? Because you have to make food that's going to hold up a little bit differently.
You know, we have to be very thoughtful about the recommending to our guests the right things to take out. You know, some of the crispy fried food, it just doesn't taste good.
Work.
But our Kung Pao chicken, our noodles, it's amazing coming home.
So my PF Chang's is in Northbrook.
Yes.
You know the area, right?
Sure.
Northbrook Court, which is a mall.
Yeah.
40% of your restaurants are at malls.
That's right.
Malls are suffering.
Yes and no. That's, again, one of those things where there's two truths. Good malls, the Class A malls, are doing well. So the great landlords are redoing their malls, and I actually think they'll be better than they've ever been. There's people who are taking out dilapidated department stores, replacing it with ice rinks and little town centers. I mean, it's amazing what's going on at malls.
And because they're forced to be creative and find something new.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, okay, I looked through what you guys are up. I saw a press release recently where you're out with new lunch bowls.
Yeah.
So do I pick up these lunch bowls? Can I pick up these lunch bowls the day before and eat them the next day at work?
No, you know what it is? What we have always struggled with as a company is having a great lunch occasion. Because if you think about when you're going out for lunch, you probably have about 30 minutes to eat because you're going to walk somewhere, park somewhere, whatever. Right. And so we want something that is quick, easy, and delicious. And we have come up with some amazing things. Like, go try our Korean bibimbap if you like interesting ethnic food. It's about as authentic as you're going to get. At $9.95, it's an incredible deal. You probably have enough for a second meal. And it's only offered at lunch, by the way. It's not a dinner item.
I live off of leftovers. Michael Osanlo, the CEO of P.F. Chang's, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
It's the welcome home.
Thank you,
right?
Yeah.
The U of C, the business school, is just named the best school business school in the country.
That's fantastic.
I think it's because of alums like you, maybe.
I doubt that, but thank you very much.
The Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. The auto industry might be twisting and turning as it keeps on churning, but one thing that won't change is where you buy those cars. And the Grossinger Auto Group is pretty happy about that, but they're probably happier about selling 9 of their 10 car dealerships to Auto Canada Inc. for $86 million. Not bad for Illinois' oldest and longest continuously operating dealership. Remember that among all this disruption these days, there are some constants that are pillars to success. Another change that's coming is for the former Nokia campus in Naperville. The 200,000 square foot space is going to be turned into an incubator called NHub 88, focusing on high-tech innovations for companies that may not have the easy access to other spaces in the city, like 1871, Blue 1647, or MHub. This could be the beginning for some big moves for suburban-based companies looking to dive into the market. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It's 12:53 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. In the studio is front row Phyllis to talk about what's going on this weekend. Phyllis, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Yeah, you came in studio today. Very nice.
I know, a surprise.
What brought you downtown?
You know, just doing some work.
All right, so what are we looking at this weekend? Tell me about the Shenyun.
Yeah, Shenyun, and it is amazing. You will discover the breathtaking beauty of classical Chinese dance, along with this unique blend of costumes and high-tech backdrops, along with a beautiful orchestra. And I have to tell you, the reviews are outstanding, and it is at three different locations. So this weekend, it's over at Rosemont. Mm-hmm. Then it jumps over to Paramount in Aurora. And then it finishes up here at Harris Theater in Chicago.
So is this like the Chinese river dance?
No, it's actually more, it's a little bit more classical and more beautiful and a little softer than the river dance.
But it's not, so I thought it was kind of trapeze and things like that, but that's not the case.
No, it's all on the stage.
And you're going to go see it?
I am, yeah. Excited.
Kenny G?
I know. Does that bring you back to your childhood or what? Our teenage.
It was a little later than my childhood, but yeah.
Okay. Well, Kenny G's going to be over at the Great Arcata Theater, and that is on Sunday. He has been performing, don't tell him this, for 3 decades.
Wow.
23 albums and more than 75 million records sold.
Okay, so here's what I want, Phyllis, and this is totally going to speak to my age. I want guys like Justin Timberlake to do matinees.
Okay. Should I call him and tell him?
Yeah, would you do that? Because, you know, it's awful, but the idea of being, you know, staying out till midnight or something keeps me home like an old man.
Right.
Because Timberlake's in town, what, next weekend or next week?
Next week on Tuesday and Wednesday. And if you don't catch him over the UC, he's going to be back over there on October 5th. And I have to tell you, I don't know if you heard that he just actually performed, I think it was over in Madison Square Garden. He created this dance floor, this light-up dance floor, and he had his fans jumping on there with him.
So he's here two nights, the 27th, 28th United Center.
Yes.
And it's not sold out?
No. It's not sold out. I mean, it's close. I mean, but United Center is pretty big.
Right. I guess that's true. But who were we talking about last week? Was it Pink or a couple weeks
Pink.
Ago? And she didn't sell out either.
Yeah, she was pretty close. I mean, they get pretty close to just about, you know.
And I guess you're right. If you're doing two nights, it's a lot. But, I mean, are people going to concerts as much as they used to?
Oh, yeah. And they're all waiting for, I mean, look at what we just announced is Lollapalooza.
Right.
And the lineup is enormous.
But that's a different kind of show, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, where you're going for a day and something rather than just going to the United Center for one show.
Yeah, well, you're getting a chance to see. I mean, Lollapalooza has 170 performances, 8 stages, 4 days. I mean, you know, it's pretty big.
You know, they announced the Ravinia schedule last
week,
too. I'm a big Ravinia guy.
I know. Did you see some of the people that are coming? Diana Ross, Anita Baker, Sugarland is back, which I'm so excited for that one. 50 Cent, that's huge.
Come on.
It is.
I want to see Jackson Browne. No, you know who I really want to see is Jason Mraz.
Yeah, Jason Mraz is going to be great.
I saw down on Northerly Island maybe 5 or 10 years ago.
Yep. So, yeah. So, Ravinia, just so you know, tickets don't go on sale to the general public until May 8th, and tickets are on sale for donors currently.
Oh, so I've got to make it. So, let's make a donation and get some good seats.
I think that's a good idea.
All right, one more. Pretty Woman still going on, right, at the Oriental?
Yes, Pretty Woman. So, we all love the movie, right? So, then take it to a different level. Put it on a stage.
I didn't see it.
You didn't?
No.
Okay, well, you're going to do it tonight.
Okay.
And then take it to a different level. Put it on a stage, add music to it, and you know all that's missing is really Richard Gere and Julia Roberts, but otherwise it's pretty phenomenal.
Brian Adams wrote the music.
He did.
That's
he wrote
cool.
the music and the lyrics, and yeah, it's really, really great. It runs now until April 15th over at the Oriental.
All right, Phyllis, where do people find more information?
Just go to frontrowphyllis.com.
Nice to see you.
Good to see you.